Welcome to Roadcase, the podcast that explores the live music experience. Thanks for joining us. I'm your host, Josh Rosenberg, and I'll be taking you on a journey through in-depth interviews with performers and key people in the industry to explore the magic of live music, how it can be totally transformative for both fans and performers, and we'll look at how they take it all out on the road. It's going to be a great ride, so here we go. Okay, welcome back to Roadcase, everybody. So glad that you're here for the beginning of this season four of Roadcase. I'm Josh Rosenberg, the host of Roadcase, and really, really psyched to be here with all of you, and so glad that you're all back to hear this season four opening interview with Alejandro Rose Garcia, who performs as Shaky Graves. I just love Alejandro. So glad to have him on the show and have this interview ready for all of you to kick off this exciting season four. I'm back after a really long summer that you all know about because I was out doing in-person interviews. Took a little time off after that to kind of refresh and recharge, and then spent all of October doing interviews for this upcoming season four. We got some great guests coming up, and today's opening show with Alejandro Rose Garcia, Shaky Graves, is no exception. As you all know, there's a number of different ways that you can get involved with the Roadcase community. Really quick and easy way is to follow us on the socials, and you can do that at on Instagram, Twitter, and Facebook. Our handle is at roadcasepod.com. We have a newly designed website. Please go check that out. It's www.roadcasepod.com. We got pictures, profiles, all kinds of great stuff, and you can find all the episodes listed there and figure out where is the best place for you to listen to all those episodes. Really psyched for that. Please go check that out. Another great way to support Roadcase is to follow us on your favorite listening platform. So if you're on Spotify, right there at the Roadcase homepage, there's a little box that says follow. It's as easy as clicking that. On Apple Podcasts, there's a check mark up in the upper right-hand corner. Please click on that check mark, and doing so will allow you to receive updates as to when new episodes come into the world. Another great way to support Roadcase, really appreciate it if you can do this, is to rate and review Roadcase. So on Spotify, right underneath that follow box, there's a box with some stars. Just click that. It's super easy. On Apple Podcasts, just scroll up a little bit from the Roadcase homepage. You'll see some stars and a place to write a review. And you guys know what to do. Thanks so much for being here. Really psyched to have Alejandro Rose Garcia, Shaky Graves, on the show to open this season four of Roadcase. Really had a nice conversation with Alejandro. He's sitting in his kitchen in Austin, Texas, where he has spent much of his time. He's not only a musician and an amazing live performer who's got his start busking as a one-man band, spent quite a bit of time in Los Angeles as well. He's also a major actor. He has been in the TV show Friday Night Lights, Spy Kids 3, a more recent movie entitled The Get Together, which is really cool. He's got one of the leading roles in that one as well. This guy does everything. And the connection with him and movies and music, and hence movie music, which are called soundtracks, as we all know, is really strong. His latest album, released on September 15th of this year, is entitled Movie of the Week and continues that theme with so much different visceral representation in addition to the album itself, which is phenomenal and speaks for itself. You can go and create a song generator, create your own movie of the week with tracks from his recording sessions, hundreds of different tracks from his multitude of recording sessions that he did for the creation of this album. Just the visuals, there's credit reels in the form of a movie for the album credits. There's just all kinds of really interesting stuff that was so intriguing to me. And really, the more I understood about Alejandro, the more I saw that connection between movies and acting and visual representation. And it just really, the excitement and the creativity of Alejandro is just really striking. And this album, to me, was really a representation of what he has done in his life to date from a creative perspective. It is really, really cool. And he's going out on tour. He's been out on tour during the end of this summer. In the course of this summer, he's just started this new leg of his tour. Tonight is November 1st. This episode's coming out tomorrow, but tonight he is at the Ryman Auditorium in Nashville with Raylan Baxter supporting Shaky Graves. He'll be out in a number of different cities. You can go to his website to check out those November dates. And for the Chicago fam, he'll be in Chicago on November 17th. One of the new cuts on his album that I'm really excited about on Movie of the Week is a song that he recorded with Sierra Farrell. It's entitled Ready or Not. Go to Alejandro's website, go check out this new album, Movie of the Week, and go see him when he's on tour. For Chicago fam, if you're going to be at that show, give me a shout out. Let me know. I'd love to say hi. So glad you're all along for this one. I'm so excited to have been able to talk to Alejandro and to bring this to you. Thanks again for being here. And I want to send a special shout out to Shaky Graves, Alejandro Rose Garcia. You're the man. Thanks so much for being on the show. And here is Shaky Graves. Alejandro, thanks for being on the show, man. So great to see you.
Yeah, you too, man.
Yeah, thanks. I just read about this hurricane that just became a Category 5 hurricane off of the Gulf of Mexico or something and hit Acapulco, and they're saying it's coming to the...
Oh, my God.
Maybe a lot of rain there, so...
Yeah, we're getting... weather here is kind of a mystery that's getting even weirder, Right now it's just like, oh, sure, it's raining, but then it's like... It's like 85 degrees, which is good because it was like 90, 150 or whatever a second ago. But then in 2 days, it's going to drop to 50.
I don't think that was the original intent of the motto, keep Austin weird, but it's world weird at this point. I mean, yeah, it used confused. To be like, if you're bored, you talk about the weather, but now it's like, no, it's like the... just becomes a climate change conversation. It's insane.
It's just such a weird coincidence that everything's kind of keeps catching on fire and freezing and getting drastic, but I'm sure it has nothing to do with
coincidence.
That's insane. Come on, what are the odds?
Yeah, that's just the explaining away process of that's the way people were saying before when Al Gore came out in the 90s and said this is going to be a real problem. They're like, fuck you, man, it's just fucking coincidence, you know. Look at the numbers.
If it's global warming, why does it get colder? Right. That's a good question.
God damn.
Yeah, at this point, I have no idea what to expect. We've had some really psychotic winters here, which nobody is prepared for whatsoever, at least where I live. We had four by fours.
Yeah.
Seriously, a bunch of people died. And my friend was telling me that he was like, the Farmer's Almanac says that this year is supposed to be a harsh winter. And I was like, wasn't last year a harsh winter? Like, what is the...
Yeah.
This plus... Like, what are we going to go for? Like, ice tornado this time? I don't know.
God, I hope not.
We'll figure it out.
I mean, it's just like such a second nature thing here in Chicago. It's like, oh, the weather was shitty. Okay, well, what's happening tomorrow? You know, I mean, it's just like, it doesn't...
It up there, though.
Yeah, it's unfortunate when all this shit, the really odd shit happens in other areas. I mean, I see the lake here, water rising, and it's almost taken over some beaches, which is... It's like a great lake and it's rising because of more flow from the St. Lawrence Waterway. I mean, I have no idea, but anyway, and you lived in LA for a while too, though, right? Didn't you start out, you ended up going to LA? I mean, you know.
I did. Yeah. I lived in LA off and on for, I lived there for a stint of like 5 years. And then when I was like a little kid, my family lived there. My mom, my dad lived there. So like early memories of being, I was like four or three or something. Formative childhood blips, you know? But
yeah.
We lived in LA and then a little bit up in Topanga Canyon with a weird old,
I love it there.
This guy that, yeah, it was the full effect. We lived on the property of a guy who was on, I think he was on Bonanza.
Oh,
and, he was like, yeah, he's like an old retired, like golden era actor guy who I think he got really into like LSD and stuff and just moved up into the canyon and had like a swing inside of his house, you know, but he had a big kind of sprawling like ranch property and we lived in one of those houses.
Wow. Wow. How old were you?
I was old enough to, still take baths in like the sink. So,
That's an amazing analogy. I mean, okay.
Yeah,
four? Like, you were a small child then if you were
small
taking
child.
Or yeah. It was a big sink. I don't know.
Huge sink. Yeah. I was about 14.
One of those Topanga Canyon sinks, you know. Like they're big out there.
Yeah, I mean
it's like a, you know.
Everybody in Topanga, yeah, we all bathe in the sink in Topanga Canyon. It's just a thing to do, man.
Yeah, and your family, your mom and dad are creatives. They're in the business. Is that why you went out there at the beginning?
God, I feel like in the beginning it was just, you know, I'm not really sure, actually. That's an interesting question.
Well, isn't your mom, I read your mom's a playwright, your dad's a set designer, so that sort of jibes with the LA vibe, I guess, right? Well,
yeah,
maybe not the playwright so much, you can do anywhere, but set designing?
Yeah, I feel like there was a very specific thing, like maybe my mom was working on she got a grant or something along those lines, because at that point when we lived up there, yeah, she was still doing like playwriting and stuff like that, but it was like my dad worked at a health food store called Follow Your Heart, which I don't think exists anymore, but we would
up
call
there
it
in
Follow
the canyon?
Your Farts. Yeah.
Follow Your Farts.
Yeah.
Nice.
Yeah. And of course I was at the right age where I was like, that's the funniest thing I've ever heard.
Oh, yeah.
It was like,
I never elevated from that age, by the way.
No, we're still there.
It's always
anyway,
fun.
I'm glad you chuckled at it a little bit.
Oh yeah.
But yeah, like that, and I guess, yeah, I lived a little bit in New Mexico and stuff, but pretty much everything has been here. You know, the 5 years I lived in LA was kind of me going out, my first like setting out on my own, like trying to get my first apartment and everything. That was the bulk majority of when I lived out in LA.
In LA. Okay. Oh, so did you move, you lived there from when you were taking baths in the sink all the way until you could live in your own apartment? Oh, there was a couple
That's
steps.
Right.
Okay.
quite a life in between that.
Yeah.
No, we moved back. I mean, cause I think we only probably spent 3 years maybe in LA. But it's just those bizarre, like I'm certain I have memories of it. But then it's like, are they filled in by like stories I've heard and then having gone back there in my adult life? But it's kind of a strange combo though. You know, it's like, it's very weird to get carbon dated on when you have like really bizarre, obscure memories. You know, you're like,
yeah,
I was what?
Yeah.
I was old.
I just kind of take me personally. I think back, I grew up in LA. So I grew up in the San Fernando Valley, like in Sherman Oaks. Mm-hmm. Yeah, some of those, I kind of remember those times. I understand when people have that thing where, is that someone's told me or is it something that I did? Maybe I just didn't talk enough with my parents for them to like reflect other stories about me. But I kind of always remember the things as they happen. But I get that. Like sometimes people sort of displace memories. They're like, oh, well, maybe that actually didn't. But you never know. So I'm kind of with my own life. I'm going with it happened. Things happen.
No, I mean, that's like, yeah. I mean, before that I lived in a kind of quintessential, my family lived in this house called the Big House that's here in Austin. That's like a sort of, not like legendary, but it was definitely an example of like older Austin spot. It was like a farm, crazy, like 6-bedroom farmhouse that had an old school, like ballroom inside of it that,
oh, wow.
Got converted into like a full dance studio. So it was like a bunch of, you know, mid 80s Austin creative people, like a interpretive dance person. You know, we had like a bunch of people in a post rock band and, you know, bunch of weird experimental theater people. And then somehow they were all able to live in this, like what would now be millions and millions. It's like right off of South Congress. And it was it was like 2 acres in the middle of the city or something. It's unbelievable. Like, wow. You basically,
like an artist compound almost, it sounds like, or, you know, a center for the arts that are, it's like, you see those cropping up. You see those cropping up in urban areas in a more formalized setting too, which is great.
It was just, you know, it was called the Big House in the classic way where it's like, yeah, that was where like a whole kind of friend group lived. A lot of roommates, a lot of weird, you know.
Did a lot of interesting and cool stuff come out of that for you creatively?
I mean, those are the memories that I have, like, very strange. Those are like my impressionistic years. That was when I was like really small. So I do think that maybe the foundation of a lot of what I believe in and kind of stand by was built by that, because I definitely lived, or I was raised very communally around a lot of different types of, you know, artists, but it wasn't like the emphasis was just on art. It was like, there were just a lot of really sweet people that would play with me when I was little and teach me bizarre shit. And, you know, I was heavily socialized as a small person.
Well, what's the difference? Like, does it matter if it's actually has to be, you seem to have made that distinction between creative people or just like nice, cool people.
Yeah. I mean, like, it wasn't, I guess I mean in the sense that it wasn't like, okay, today you have to come into,
no, it wasn't. You know, like, I get that it wasn't a school, dude.
Like, yeah, exactly.
Yeah. But,
I mean, but you know, everything's kind of a school, I guess. If you're raised by like a particularly sporty family that's constantly doing stuff, you're going to spend a lot of time on a
good analogy. I know those families, you know? And my kids are athletic, and we used to just take them and we just go out and play and do things like that. And, you know, a bat and a ball or frisbee or whatever, or football, you know, just toss it around. I guess you guys are just tossing around ideas and being,
just smoking joints and right.
Yeah, exactly. Well, I was doing that. You could do that with frisbee too, you know.
Right. No, that's true.
I still do that. And you went to school in Austin too, is that correct?
Yeah, I went to high school in Austin. that's the peak of my academic achievements.
Oh, college?
No.
Oh, okay. All right. I think I read someone misquoted somewhere about saying you were from University University of Texas briefly with like theater and arts.
Well, my mom was a professor at UT.
Okay.
So I spent a lot of time there. And I was in play, you know, like if there was a kid in a play, then I got to be that kid in that play.
Oh,
few times.
You had a good connection there.
I spent a lot of time on campus, which was really weird. I spent between that and even St. Edward's, which is another school here. Both of those theaters, my parents worked at and spent a lot of time in. And so I would just hang out with a lot of college kids. Again, got very socialized by a bunch of college students at a different point in my life too. And was taught about like graphic novels and also, you know, that next range of stuff by some people.
Yeah. Yeah. When were you playing music in high school? When did you start sort of,
started playing
performing
music
or?
Oh, I mean, I really didn't like, kind of visualize myself as being a musician really much into, I think my first time I played guitar in front of people was like sophomore year of high school. I started playing in middle school, so I guess it wasn't that long after, but I was always, you know, like pretty sure I was going to do, theater or on camera acting of some sort. That was kind of what I did the most of when I was little.
Acting. Yeah. So from what I understand, you're going in so many different, and there's the acting and the music, which is interesting. And you achieved that goal. You've been in, for those that are listening that don't know, you've been in, you know, major motion pictures, some stuff. Friday Night Lights. What is it? Like Friday Night Lights, Spy Kids. That must've been fun.
Yeah,
Get Together, which I watched a little bit of. That was cool. You were in like the first scene of Get Together. You pop up right away.
Yeah, I'm one of the three leads in that movie.
Yeah, yeah. So that happened for you. That's amazing.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I guess just like anything, it's you know, there's a lot that I, there's far more that I, than I haven't done in that than I have.
That's a nice place to be.
Yeah. I mean, it can be, it's like, it takes a lot of work, you know, it takes a lot of work. And as natural as some of it feels to me, like it, I think if you threw me in front of a camera, I'd feel more natural than someone who has never had to do that per se.
Sure.
Because there's a very bizarre rhythm of having to do scenes and get coverage. And if you haven't done anything like that, it doesn't really matter how comfortable you feel being in front of a camera. The whole like exhaustive ritual of having to film stuff is crazy. And to a certain degree, I don't love it, you know, like I do love it. But working on other people's stuff is it can be really hit or miss, you know, like getting to do something like Friday Night Lights was insane because that was just such a thing at the time. And it also was kind of a sleeper, like people weren't really watching it when it was out, but yeah. Then at the same time in Austin, it was a huge deal because basically anybody who worked in Austin got a shot to work on that TV show.
Oh, really?
Eventually. Okay. Because because they shot the whole thing here. So there's so many characters throughout a season of television. They shot, I think it was 7 seasons of it. So My now wife, she was in season 4. She was on it longer than I was. And yeah, it's just, there's people you're like, oh, there's so-and-so, like, oh shit, there's, you know, there's cool. So-and-so. Yeah. So it felt really nice and got to meet some people that I'm still friends with, like Jesse Plemons, who now his career is giant, you know, he's amazing. Mm-hmm. And you get to see, cause he was always very natural, but now you get to see someone who's gotten to work on it constantly and be in all this incredible stuff. And you know, I just watched him in Killers of the Flower Moon yesterday.
So. Oh, right. Oh, that's a good, yeah. I mean, I've been meaning to see that. Was that good?
Yeah, it was great.
Yeah.
Very cool.
Are you sort of overlapping those two careers with your music career? Or do you have plans on going back to act? Just how does that work for you? And you've got such a full plate. How does that balance kind of work for you?
I mean, it's hard to say. I mean, actually, speaking of Killers of the Flower Moon, there's a ton of musicians in that, which is really funny. Jason Isbell's in it.
Oh, really?
Terry Allen's in it.
Like as in like roles, or is he?
Yeah.
Like,
oh, Sturgill Simpson's in it. No kidding. Jack White's in it.
Really?
A lot of people. Yeah.
What,
yeah.
Like the director and producers are like super music fans, or?
Well, the director is Martin Scorsese, so yeah.
Oh, shit. I mean, whoops. Oh, of course there's music guys in there. Duh. Yeah,
he definitely.
Okay, this is like a music pod. Let me just clear up. This is a music podcast, not a, you know. Okay, yeah, Scorsese.
Just a little guy named Martin Scorsese.
Yeah, you know, he's had some decent songs and soundtracks in his films over the years, he's done, I would have a little to say.
Bit. He dedicated the whole movie to Robbie Robertson, which, you know. Is very sweet. Also, after a whole movie about like super intense Native American genocide, I was like, I'm just like, and this is dedicated to Robbie. You're like, you love Robbie, you know?
Right.
That's great.
Go ahead. Sorry.
But like that being said, you know, like, I don't know how often Jason Isbell has acted, but he did great. And it's like, he's from Oklahoma and the movie takes place in Oklahoma. So he was really authentic within it. But I mean, you know, I think in everybody's dream world, that's the kind of stuff, like if Martin Scorsese calls you on the phone and says, hey, you want to be in my movie? You say, fuck yeah, I'll make some, make some space for it.
Yeah, of course.
But trying to set, you know, like really, you know, I feel very lucky to have, you know, a career in music, which is very strange even to say out loud, but it's, you know, I feel very lucky to get to do that anyway. Mm. And it does take a lot. I have a lot of things that I'm like, you know, that don't just kind of pop up that I have to constantly, a lot of fires that I need to constantly stoke. And in some ways to get what I would dream of getting out of acting, I would have to do the same thing in that. I wouldn't want to just kind of half-ass it. So I'm not really trying to balance both, at all. You know, I'm pretty focused on music and trying to keep my own sanity and life together, you know, because that's
so if Scorsese, what you're trying to say, it's a long kind of long way around saying that if Scorsese had called you, you would have been in that movie.
Yeah. Or if I made something with somebody else, if I had agency over it, you know, I would love to make something.
Yeah.
But you have
that agency in music, and you've successfully combined the two art forms in a sense with with your latest release, Movie of the Week, which I just think is so brilliant in the way that you've combined so many of your different artistic interests. And there's even a script for the album, which I found fascinating also. But it's a very cinematic, for those that are listening, go out and listen to this album because it's extraordinary. But for those listening, it's a concept album without a real concept that you're overtly stating. And that's even underpinned more by the fact that, and this is amazing, on the website, you can enter any subject, or is it just a music genre? Anything you want.
Anything you want, yeah.
And it'll compile an album from tracks from the album, but then it's about the recording process of this whole. I can't talk enough about this. I usually don't like just jump right into the latest. I really, you know, I'll have artists on here and we'll just go off and talk about stuff. But there's just so much about this album that the more I learned about your history and doing some and research about what you've done and what your interests are, from what I understand, and I'll learn more about this and we'll all learn more about that during this conversation, but it's sort of all come together on this album, it feels like. And like a lot of artists' latest works are like this is where they are now, but I feel like this really represents a lot of where you've been, and it feels kind of, I'm like, yeah, fuck yeah, dude, this is really cool that you're able to put these two worlds together. So I don't think I really finished talking about, so people go to the website and you enter in a word and it'll compile tracks. And the reason why it can is because you got hundreds of tracks from these 2 years. You took you 2 years to put this all together, but these were amazing jazz, improv, fusion, rock, what have you sessions where, and you've got all this material from those sessions. So there it is. That's my spiel on the new album. But tell me your thoughts on it, and like, how does that? I guess the question is, how does this represent you where you are today? And is it as kind of just this historical broad brushstroke of where you've been? Is it a culmination of where Alejandro is today?
Yeah, definitely. I mean, first off, I really appreciate you saying that, just because the process of making anything, especially something that has kind of this scope and has been taking this many years to kind of put together, I at certain points have totally lost sight of the fact that people would even listen to it, you know, like that it would ever see the light of day or anything. You know, I'm just like,
did this one take you longer than most albums did? Because it just said
I mean, I guess the part that I'm the most proud of that I remind myself I need to kind of explain or to put out there, because, you know, otherwise no one would really know. It is definitely a culmination of this process that I've kind of honed, from when I first started to make music, of just like a style of editing, and song creation that I do. Like when people will ask, what's your songwriting process? I usually kind of take that in a very traditional sense of like, well, typically I'll write, like if I write a song and sit down and write a song, it's like the music will come first typically. And then, you know, if it all happens in the same day, it's like, I usually mumble a little bit and record myself kind of just being, you know, wishy-washy with it, and then sort of put it together by looking back and forth. And that's the base level of like a song.
Yeah.
But because of the way that I've always done stuff, you know, like when I was growing up, I always wanted to be a visual artist too. We were talking before we started recording about just like Sunday paper, you know, comics and stuff. Mm. And I grew up like a disciple of Calvin and Hobbes and Bill Watterson.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah. And I love that.
And he's like, I still think that his that Calvin and Hobbes is some of the most like philosophical ageless, timeless. You can read it right now and be like, holy shit. Like,
right.
Who is this? Is this for me right now? You know, like what, or like
timeless. But, yeah.
And so I always, like visual art was always a very specific thing to me, and comics and drawing. And so, I mean, I guess my idea of compilations, like, you know, even with Bill Watterson or like with, we were talking about The Far Side or whatever, you would read those comics in the newspaper and then eventually they would be put out in books. And then those books would be put into like larger galleries or compilations. And so, I mean, even before I started even really listening to music, I always thought of like compendiums or putting things together or like how to present, you know, a body of work. And I guess in albums, you know, like when I first started to make my first record, that's pretty much what that was like, it technically the first album I made, Roll the Bones, is like, I didn't sit down and just write, you know, like write them in order and then be like, oh, well, that was great. Like,
it took
me like years of scouring through my life to kind of collect those songs, you know, like one of them was from 3 years from the other. And it, you know, maybe it took a day to record, or maybe I started a recording and then circled back around to it a year later and finished it, or what have you. But a process that I especially used to do, because I feel like I'm always growing as a physical musician. And I also like am, you know, not someone who ever really took classes. I'm self-taught, sometimes much to my own hindrance, and sometimes, you know, it's advantageous, but I would write music, like just get into a proper zone or whatever and do a lick one time that I knew I couldn't like replicate, but I would record it. And then I would find ways to slice that together and then basically build a song that I wish I was able to play, and then put lyrics over it and then present that as the song, and then
figure out how to learn.
Yeah. Basically cover my own music. Yeah. So that was the way that I kind of for many years started to do that. And then when I would play those songs live, they'd take on a different thing. And yeah, I just kind of always let it breathe back and forth like that. So this project, you know, like you mentioned, the going into it, it was also very open-ended. I had, you know, basic themes, not even really demos and definitely not lyrics, and went in and got a bigger band than I had ever put together, that were just all these people that I really loved who had like fabulous attitudes and I really looked up to and as musicians and friends, but they were all in other bands. And then because of the pandemic, honestly, we all had time off. So I was like, hey, I don't know if I'll ever get you guys in a room together, but like, let's do a dream team thing.
Right.
And I was like, do you guys want to try and make a soundtrack to a movie that doesn't exist? And they were like, I have no idea what that means. Sure. And I was like, I don't really know what it means either, but that's the premise, you know?
Yeah. I mean, when did that kernel of creativity kind of come to you about like, okay, I've done acting. I've been in front of the camera. I'm a musician primarily. When's that melding of worlds, or has it always been like that for you? Are your other albums also kind of a cinematic representation of where you're at in your own mind?
I think so. Yeah.
Okay. And I guess the movie of the week thing, you know, that's why this seems like it's like a principal effort to actually do that.
Well, part of it is like, part of movie of the week is a very straightforward concept because the base material came from me working on a movie soundtrack for free for a friend of mine's movie. That was also during lockdown.
Oh yeah. And I remember reading about that. The guy was like, fuck you. This is not happening. Basically. No, it wasn't in those right words, but that's the kind of takeaway that I had.
that's how it felt to me. But basically like I got asked to work on a soundtrack for free, and I was like, sure. And put in a ton of work and got really excited and put a bunch of stuff up. And then, the director, To a certain degree, it felt like at the end of the day, they really just wanted to license a couple of my existing songs, but didn't want to pay any money for it. And so,
oh, so what he thought, like, for befriending you, you'd do him a favor or something. Yeah, go ahead and use these for free because I don't have to eat.
It wasn't like that nefarious, but by the end, I did get a little butthurt. There was a little bit of that, but
right.
But then also, it was like, you know, I got really excited just because that was, again, one of these kind of Venn diagram areas that things I'm obsessed with and that I really love cross over each other, and no one has asked me to do this and I haven't had time yet. So I was like, fucking movie score, like,
yeah,
let's go. And so of course I totally got carried away with it and was like, this is my new life, you know, like I don't ever have to go on tour again.
I found a new career.
Johnny Greenwood. I'm gonna lock myself in, get a studio with fucking screens everywhere and you'll never see me again.
Right. Trent Reznor.
Exactly. And so I started, you know, so I made a bunch of stuff and I was really proud of the work and I thought it actually helped the movie a lot. And then the director, who's the director of the movie, was like, ooh, it's a little spooky. And I was like, yeah, it's a spooky scene. And he was like, no, I don't think so. And I was like, okay, well, agree to disagree. We're watching the same thing. But, you know, at the end of the day, that's kind of what I was talking about earlier, too. Uh-huh. It's like, it's not fair for me to be upset that our vision didn't match up if it's his movie. But again, doing it for free, I was like, well, I've done all this work and I'm going to end up using these either way. We had made an agreement too, that any of this stuff,
that the music was yours, that at least you get the music. Like, he's not like taking the music from you, like some lab where they have med students come in there and develop shit and then think they own it. And then the company goes around and sells it to a biotech company, makes bazillions. It doesn't give people anything.
That's 100%. And it's like, you know, the dramatic story of it is that it all got rejected or whatever, but a bunch of it is in this movie. But there were just kind of bigger things that I thought would be like, I built specific themes for characters that kind of went back and coursed through it and stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And they kind of opted out of taking that route. And I was like, are you sure? You know, like, whatever, to each their own. So,
well,
not
to get too far afield, because I'd love to focus on a couple other things about this new album and the whole visual creative aspect of the output for this new album. But you like to be in control.
Yes. Yeah, I guess so.
I kind of gathered that, Alejandro, over the course of this conversation thus far. But you want to, you know, that's kind of the vibe. You know, you mentioned a couple things down, you know, already that was like, you want to do the thing, right?
Yeah.
Soundtracking, you're not kind of doing the thing unless it's your own movie, right? Just to use that analogy.
It's fair. And it's also like, yeah. And it wasn't as collaborative as I had hoped it was going to be.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Yeah. Like at the end of the day, it wasn't like, I guess that was the part, was that I wanted to be entrusted a little bit more with the musical side, because in certain ways I definitely had big disagreements, but you know, like, again, at the end of the day, if they were giving me, if this was a job that I was like paid to do, I would be like, okay, that's fine.
Yeah.
But I did get a little, it did feel a little disrespectful in a certain way, that it was like, I really put a lot of work in and it was kind of a like,
yeah, it's going to hurt a little bit, I guess.
But them's the breaks. You know?
Yeah. But then you got to do this. So we were talking about like, when did this idea come to like, okay, I'm going to do my own movie soundtrack. And it's not going to, and what I find interesting is it's not linear. It doesn't have to be linear. And I love the David Bowie presence. Doesn't he pop up in a video, some like a brief sort of view of him in the first or second track or whatever it is? And then you talked about how it's sort of the Ziggy vibe. You know, there's a theme in there somewhere. I know there's a theme in I know there's a theme in Dark Side of the Moon. Okay, that's a little easier because it's all just about death and dying and fucked upness and money and greed and all the bad things that Roger Waters likes to talk about.
Oh, yeah.
Ziggy's got there's a thing. You kind of feel it in your gut, this existential kind of vibe, but it doesn't necessarily have to be linear. And I think And I guess you talked about that being kind of an influence for you.
Oh, definitely. Yeah. I mean, Ziggy Stardust was the first Bowie I got into. And I guess in some ways it was the first, like, you know, concept album I paid attention to. And I was really driving myself crazy trying to figure out what the plot of Ziggy Stardust was too, you know, because like as soon as I started to understand, like, I was like, is there a story I don't get within this? And it's like, there is a story in Ziggy Stardust, but it's not like, this is the chapter where this, you know, it's not like this right. song.
Well, he head fakes you right off the bat by being the Ziggy Stardust character on stage.
Right.
And you just envision that that's who's singing. When I listen to Ziggy Stardust, I imagine in my head, it's Bowie Ziggy.
Yeah.
Who's
Lady Stardust? You know, like what is?
Yeah. Well, who's the character in 5 years? Also, like, and who's the rock and roll suicide guy that I always imagined some foggy cobblestone alley in Rock and Roll Suicide at the end, and he's lights up a cig and starts thinking about his life, and which doesn't really jive with like what I'd think of some crazy, you know, the character Starman character, you know.
Right. Oh yeah, absolutely.
Right.
Well, and so I mean that was that in as much that is, you know, a concept album, that was kind of what gave me the I guess it gave me the impetus more to try and find a plot that at least I understood a little bit in it. And I also knew that I didn't have to justify I didn't have to do it to where it's like, okay, I don't have to justify every moment in this script in a linear or
no.
in this script,
Hell
in,
no.
whatever, in this album. Oh. But part of me is like, wants to go full Dungeons and Dragons on this shit. That's like, oh yeah, baby. Like every single thing is intentional. And
you mean or explain it? Cause what I've read is that somewhere you've said, oh, I know the plot, and you guys can create your own plot and you can create your own soundtrack too with the, it's fucking brilliant, dude. It's so cool.
Well, did you read the script?
I went through the script. Yeah. It was cool.
I mean, technically, I didn't know what the plot was until I wrote that script, which sounds weird.
I read it for content. I didn't read it to like gather up the evidence of your theme. But yeah, I'm going to come back to you on that.
Well, because it's technically just the liner notes of each song. It's a description of each song as well as a script.
Yeah.
very nerdy.
No, totally, dude. Oh, and let's also mention that you did the song, the whole album song credits in the form of a video of movie credits at the end.
Right.
And I really resonated with that because when I watch a movie at the end, I look at, you know, and I see the when they roll the credits, I look just to capture if I missed any, like, oh, who was that guy again? I couldn't figure that out.
Yeah.
And then there's all the gaffers and the grips and shit. I fast forward through that. Then I go to the song part because I want to know, you know, oh, wait, they didn't write that song. Oh, and it's performed and this is the cool one. And what was that cover? And like, who performed that cover? You know, because I've been in a movie theater. I'm not Shazamming the stuff like I am at home. I just Shazam everything.
Right. Well, and back to like, so the process too of building it, like you said, a lot of the stuff that I've made has come from a sense of trying to get control over something in my life, you know, and artistic endeavors are a great way to force your will upon, you know, reality or whatever. And,
That's an interesting concept.
Right. Well, it's kind of, you know, by making something tactile, you make, you know, it's almost a form of proof of life. You know, it's like
you're creating your own reality. 100%.
Yeah.
I mean, to say it's your own reality implies that you're not acknowledging, it could imply that you're not acknowledging this reality, because there are those that create their own reality because they have a mental illness. Or they have mental health challenges. That's not what we're talking about. We're talking about playing around with what you see and what the world is for you, which artists do in a musical sense on an album, but also having these other pieces that are also visual was what really captured my imagination for this project.
Well, and so part of it too, like, okay, so the one side is that the movie of the week thing is like had to do a lot with the, you know, whatever the origin story of the rejected soundtrack, you know, and then also the way that we built it was like we would go in and kind of listen to demos or not demos, but some of them were the pieces from the movie soundtrack, Or just instrumentals from the made.
Wait, from the movie soundtrack? You mean the one that you already created that was rejected?
The rejected one. Oh, yeah. And like some of the themes actually appear in that film, but like, you know, not as they ended up. Because I was like, oh, it'd be cool to turn these into narrative songs instead of a long kind of 9-minute, you know, amorphous blob. But so the way we would do that is we'd run an entire studio of microphones for the whole day of the session. You know, we would go in and kind of have a meeting before, and then we would just start playing. And we had like two drum kits set up. We had a drum kit and an ISO booth and a drum kit in the main room. Mm-hmm. And then we would just kind of swap. And if people would go smoke cigarettes or whatever, people would jump on different things. And we didn't do a lot of like backtracking. Sometimes we would build things out. We'd stop for a little bit, but for the most part, we tried to keep moving. Mm-hmm. And so the editing process kind of went back to like I used to, what I used to do is like, basically I had to go through and listen to 3 weeks of 12-hour long recordings and then annotate them, mark them, slice them all out, turn them into individual sessions, denote what I thought the song was. And then some of the songs I would just find like us crushing, you know, like us basically playing for 25 minutes. And then out of that, there's 3 minutes.
That's usable. That's insane.
That you're like, oh, and it's in there somewhere. And so I sliced that. A couple of the songs are sliced out of things like that where people don't even remember playing the music. And then I was like, oh, it inspired me to write different lyrics over it. So there was all this, the inspiring thing for me was to be able to find stuff that wasn't even intentional, not even.
Yeah. It goes back to what we were saying before about, I don't know how, when this was in your own personal history, but when you were putting the songs together and just creating shit, you'd create a lick and then you'd play it back and then you'd hook it up with something else and then learn the song.
Yeah, exactly.
But holy shit, let's talk about, okay, even if it was a week, you mean a 5-day work week, that's 12 hours, that's 60 hours times three, that's 180. Let's call it 200 and probably 200, close to 220 hours of music. You're a patient individual.
Yeah, but it's also, I love editing music.
Well, yeah, that's a massive amount of stuff. Are you an organized person in your head?
In small bursts.
I have my moments of organization. Yeah,
whatever my corner of the like ADD rug is, you know, it's like I'll be like, you know what? I have a great file organization system today. Like this is the way we're gonna title everything. It's like 001, you know, like it's the date and then the session and right. then
how long like, did that last for, dude?
Oh, and then it's like, oh, I go on a tour, I come back and I'm like 00 what? Ah, fuck it. This one's called butt play or whatever. And then it's like, so then I have, you know, it's kind of spread out over like 4 hard drives that have varying levels of like hard distinction. Mm. And then for the online song generator thing, I went through and tried to just collect as many of the like loose ends as I could to just generate as much. So I got like over 100 songs in there. And for each one of those, I had to go back over the sessions and pick up. So it's like, you know, now that, cause a lot of them, it's like, I didn't have lyrics. So I would sit and try and like figure out what I wanted to write the song about, which was really fun.
Yeah.
But then once the record was already coming out, I mean, I was doing this up till like 4 days before the record was released, was still editing. Shit.
The generator. So what, like each song, each track, how many tracks were there? There were hundreds of tracks for the song generator, generator.
So for each track, there's like 10 tracks in the album generator. Yeah. And then, so for each one of those, let's say like the song Big in the World, there's 11 versions of Big in the World in there or something, 9.
Oh, so and are they tagged for certain search? We are going into the weeds, but I know you live in these weeds.
It's I can't tell you the deep secrets of how the mechanism works, but it's, it's all catered to.
Yeah, I'm digging because I'm actually a member of this intense scientific community and we're trying to figure out what you did. You're on the watch list, dude.
No, I mean, part of it is just, it's about the randomness of stuff. It's like you create the, your, what your imagination pulls together out of it. You know, it's not as complicated as them being tagged for like keywords and stuff like that. It's all just the randomness of the universe kind of coming together with whatever word you put in happens to will correlate something secretly better than I could ever even plan. So any of the random coincidence, I basically made a coincidence generator. that's what I'd like to say. Right. A coincidence generator. See?
We're pulling back the curtain here a little bit.
Yeah. But I mean, part
ignore
of
the man
is,
behind the curtain.
Yeah. Well, so the, all of that is like helped me finally settle on it being called Movie of the Week. You know, the other meaning of it too is just like how kind of like fucked up everything has seemed, you know, honestly, for most of my life. Like the shit is always coming at you. There's always, you know, Movie of the Week could also just as easily mean like problem or apocalypse of the week, because like there's always something extremely drastic playing out, and it's kind of
like that's how we started this conversation, was like talking about the weather and how just like the talk about climate change and the vocabulary and your attitude behind it and how you're affected by it, it changes every fucking week, man. It changes every day, you know. Yeah, it's the randomness, but there's also not a randomness about that. That's science, right?
Yeah, well, yes, that's true.
right, but.
But in us just trying to organize all this, like you were saying too.
Right.
Like,
I mean, it's not just the weather. It's pandemic. This is also science based. I mean, there's other kinds of social interaction issues, but randomness of, I love being in the world and the randomness of meeting people, having conversations with new people. That is true randomness. Being in the right place, you know, right place at the right time. You know, you travel. I travel a lot. I love just going to a place. Jesus, I had great conversation. I was visiting my son in Maine at Colby College. He had just had his first parents' weekend of his college career. Went out there, sat down at the bar on Sunday evening. I was kind of depressed because I just said goodbye to him. And that's really hard when your kid goes off to college, because I was going home. Had great conversation with a couple of the women at the bar, the bartenders, and like, you know, it's just this randomness of shit. There's a guy there went to music school with like Jen Hartswick, and who's the horn player for Trey Anastasio band. And he was friends with the new bass player in Trey Anastasio's band. And then I just seen Fish here over the weekend. And like, he's from, and what? Those kind of randomness things that things just happen. Like, that's the beauty. That's a real beautiful part of life.
Yeah. Well, and then the third side of it, which like I wrote, you know, I tried to write kind of secretly, but also pretty straightforwardly. A lot of the lyrical content is kind of questioning, like, you know, like how, like I watch a lot of tennis. This is a total side note, but
I'm a total sports fan. I watch cycling and I watch F1 and I'll watch tennis if I have time, but I like watch every cycling race, pro cycling.
But there's always that question, like, especially with something like tennis, well, the way that
who's your favorite player, by the way?
Oh, my favorite player is Andy Murray.
That's old school already. What about your favorite new generation player?
My favorite new generation player is, I like Andre Rublev a lot if he doesn't commit suicide, you know, by sticking a racket through his own face.
How about the Greek guy? I like him a lot. Sissipas?
Oh, no, don't do that. No, you can't do that. We can't do that. He's a whore.
So you're an Andy Murray fan. Okay.
I am. Well, partially because of his, we're the same age. So he, in tennis, he's like a 3,000 year old person. He's basically a mummy.
Right. Yeah.
He's playing right now, actually. I should be watching him, but he probably already lost.
Sorry. We can go back to it.
No. But anyway, like, okay, for him, for instance, there's the question of like, how many more years does he really have left? You know, like that's always the question that's being asked to someone like Andy Murray. And for him, it's like, he's already won, what, like 4 Grand Slams. He's been number one in the world. He's like crushing it. And it's, to a certain degree, it's like, what does he want? You know, this is his life. Like, what does he actually want about tennis? I've only been following it for a year and I love him and don't want him to retire. But like, I guess that question is sort of like what I ask about myself a lot in the album too. And one of the reasons that I love Andy is that idea of like, how often in all of our lives do things just kind of continuously get better? You know, like, do you get bigger opportunities to play on bigger stages, or, you know, how, like, if I have this big idea for a sweeping movie crossover album, you know, do I have time to like put that off, or do I have to get all these ideas off the ground right now? And so that is kind of another subtext of the movie of the week thing, is that I am just another musician of millions, you know, that like, in some ways, the things that are kind of iconic with me that I started with, like, you know, wearing suspenders and stuff like that, is very, right, is very 2011. And like, that movie is over, you know, that time is, doesn't mean it's not valid or that people don't like it. It's just, there's something else going on now.
Does that mean on this tour, you're not coming out banging on the suitcase with the hi-hat and that whole thing?
Oh no, I do that.
Oh, so it's still a part. It's still a part of you. You don't. There are some artists that are like, I'm never doing that again.
No, yeah. Well, but there are some songs that have been retired, and but it's more of just like a, I guess, an approach, you know, a mindset to it, and a very, very much something that I try and keep in the forefront. That I hope I don't get. I don't want to get like entitled that this is something like, oh, I guess I just get to go out and play music to people that are actually listening again, you know,
yeah,
like,
yeah, yeah.
I'd rather take a nap, and I would sometimes, but it really, like, it's important, I guess. It was a way for me to remind myself, like, yeah, just to talk
well,
about
does it
that.
Get frustrating, like, when people write about it's Shaky Graves, the one man band guy, has put out an album called Movie of the Week?
No, I don't think so. Because yeah, because it's like, I'm not embarrassed or
it's a part of
at all.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Perturbed by it.
Well,
I mean, I get a kick out of people when they're like, wow, it's a huge departure. And I'm like, yeah, but it also just doesn't sound like you've paid attention. He hasn't checked in on, and, you know, like, I don't expect people to keep up with every stupid thing I do, but.
Well,
like,
yeah, if someone inspected what I was doing 10 years ago and picked out like what my main theme was, you know, they're right. Like, oh, this is a huge departure for you. Your life now. No, what I hear you saying is that you're evolving naturally as a human and as a creative, and kind of, this is where you are now, and you're proud of what that's just kind of how you started, and it's part of who you are.
Well, and it's even though, like, so we started doing, you know, I haven't had like a big light show or anything specifically like that, but I want, you know, coming from set design land and stuff,
yeah,
and growing up in theater, it's like, there's a lot of weird things I want to do with the show as opposed to just come out and play music and leave.
I loved your set designs. I think I saw a show in Chicago at the Vic, I want to say like 4 or 5 years ago. So I'm looking forward to you coming to Chicago, I think, next month.
Yeah. Oh, it's going to be a blast.
Yeah.
But it's like, these things I have to, I've had to really, you know, I'm, again, as much as I like being in charge, it's also just a horrible heavy weighs the crown of having to make all these decisions about like, okay, we're going to bring out a lighting guy and run cues and doing like, and then at the same time I have to play my own music over and over and over. It's like being tortured by your own creations all the time.
When you're doing that, let's play the song again, like, so we can figure it out.
Yeah.
Like, just use a recording, guys.
Oh, or having to listen to the recording of the show from the night before, just blast through a club while you run lighting cues, and you're like, can we turn this down? We're doing this down just like a little bit.
Poor Alejandro needs a break from himself.
Dude,
sometimes.
It's a lot.
Alejandro's
a lot.
Dude, you're married. You have a kid. You have kids?
No kids. No kids yet.
You had to think about that for a sec.
I'm married. Yeah, kind of. Yeah.
You're like, wait, was that? No, that wasn't me. Okay.
No kids as far as I know.
So you watch tennis. What else? What do you do for fun?
I play tennis. That's been I play a lot of tennis, actually.
Have you just picked that up?
Yeah. I fell in love with it a little over a year ago.
And you'd never
started
played
watching
before?
It and, no.
What's that like? Are you athletic per se?
And lazy, kind of in equal measure. Like I need to be athletic in the sense that like I'm much happier when I'm doing, when I can trick myself into exercising, but I hate going to the gym and
fuck
just
the
like,
gym. I'm a bike rider. I mean, I get out in the world.
Yeah. Like, and I've been lucky enough to stay fit by having a blend of equally kind of debaucherous, unhealthy, habits tied in with like just kind of weird, scrappy outdoorsy shit, you know, accidentally go on a hike for a long period of time. And also, like an actual sport, I started playing sandlot baseball a little bit, which I'm terrible at. But that's been really, really fun too. So, I mean, my Sporty Spice years are like kind of coming out of the blue at me right now, which I really appreciate.
That's cool.
But yeah, the tennis thing was not on my bingo card at all. I did not see that coming. I've now been to I went to 5 tournaments this last year. Went to the U.S. Open.
Oh, the Open. When I lived in New York in the 90s, I would go all the time. You know, every year I would make it out there for a couple nights. Amazing. I saw Jimmy Connors play there.
Oh, that's crazy.
Like right at the end of his career.
Right. Did you see the big, his giant blowout year where he was playing?
Yeah, that was the year. Like when he play like Aaron Crickstein in like the semifinals? Go look up that match. It was crazy. Yeah. Anytime Jimmy Connors played a night match at the Open, in the old Open, when it used to be Louis Armstrong Stadium, it's bonkers. Isn't that a great tournament?
Where he played Pat McEnroe and beat him and the whole crowd went insane.
Something like that. Yeah. When he made that run, his last run to the semis or something like that, or the quarters or whatever it was.
And that's also like, I guess those are my heroes right now, because those seem like, you know, ancient adults now. And now I'm like, that's exactly how old I am. I'm like, I got to make a run. Like, I don't think I'll ever, you know, I'm not trying to compete heavily or anything, but I am really excited I think if I train a little harder, I might enter a tournament next year.
Wow. Maybe this year, that's impressive, man. Yeah. Anyone just can do it. You just like,
just see how I do. Yeah.
All I have to do is play. Worst you can do is lose the match and you're still, you know,
and it's like that's the movie of the week thing too, is like, while I have it, you know, like while people are coming to shows and I'm getting to play big rooms, it's like, I'd rather go a little bit broke and try and like really put on a show while people are actually looking at it, you know? And while I still have knees and feet and legs that work, I might as well run around a little bit more. The whole thing.
Wait, you missed me on the connection between the going broke and playing sports.
Well, it's like, yeah, it's the same thing. It's like before, you know, my back could break. I mean, like,
oh, it's like you want to do certain things now because you're afraid of getting old. Is that it?
Well, I'm not afraid of it, but I'm aware of it. Like, I'm getting older. Yeah,
I'm getting older, dude. Totally. All I can say, and I would say, it's a great time to start becoming more athletic, because I lived my whole life being very athletic, and I'm really glad that I did, because I get to goof off in like my 50s and feel like, oh, I put in my time. I can, you know,
nice.
And now that I'm going to be 60 this year in December, and it's a couple months, you know, I'm really glad that I got that athletic foundation already down, because I can always go back to it, and it's not a reach for me to go skiing or, you know, and I said, fuck the gym earlier. It's just like, I'd rather be outside, but when ski season comes around, you know, I try to like renew a gym membership so I can like do leg lifts and all that kind of
stuff. Yeah. So they don't snap off.
My body hurts if I don't like do yoga or go out and be athletic or do something. It's just fun, man. And tennis, you're totally on your own, right? You're out there, you know, and it feels like you're the first performer I've met who's like a tennis kind of really loves tennis and wants to play. And I think there's certainly an analogy there, like being in your head. Tennis, you cannot be in your head. If you are in your head, your body locks up and you just can't play. You've got to hit that ball like you know it's going in, and you've got the ability to do that, because the second you think that, you're fucked. So is there an analogy there for you with performance?
Well, it's very calming to me. The other thing that I got into, I still love, but just don't do as often, because it's just a little bit more of an equipment sport, is I was bowling really heavily for a long time, and I still do it. Like, but it's the same thing where you have, you know, it's not the exact same thing, obviously. It's a lot more passive, but you know, I would go and bowl by my, people are like, you bowl by yourself? I'm like, fuck yeah, I do. And it's like, if I was really just having a lot of noise, you know, like just head noise, just like stressed about stuff or life's going weird or whatever, I could go and calm down. And basically your problem is 10 pins that you have a certain amount of control over, but you just have to do the same thing perfectly every time, which never happens. And then you have to kind of solve your way out of this little problem.
Yeah. You got to stay out of your head when you're bowling. I mean, there's a physical movement thing there. The eye-hand coordination is not as strong as it is in tennis, which is crazy, right? There's so many things that can go wrong.
Right.
I enjoy bowling. It's really the best games that I've bowled, you know, like over 200 was when I just I didn't even think about it, man. You just fucking roll and you're just, and you can't celebrate getting a strike too hard. You're just like, okay, yep, that happened. We'll step up again.
Well, and that's the what I really get out of tennis and like watching it too, is just like how brutal it is mentally. Like,
oh my God, it is the most brutal mental sport. I'm too emotional of a person. How do you get around that? You're an artist, man. You put your emotions on your sleeve. You go out there, but you kind of have a calming center that allows you to not get pissed when you fuck up? Is that the kind of person that you are? Because I admire when people can do that.
No, I get plenty pissed. But I mean, that's part of it, is that like, this is a more direct way for me to kind of deal with this, you know, like it feels cathartic in a lot of ways. Like I have to remind myself that I have not been playing, you know, like, cause you'll go through the whole emotion where I'm like, can't even believe I do this. Like, right.
You suck. I suck. I suck as a human being.
Yeah. I'm like, I'm a terrible person. Like you, I'm like, look, dog, you just started doing this. You should be very like, this is fun. And then, and you're like, right. Like it's wild to, and then
so much self-talk goes on in tennis.
Well, for 2 hours, you have to continuously recenter yourself. And I feel like it's just really healthy for me. I have a great time. And then I realize I've been running around like a crazy person for like 2.5 hours.
You need to, have you read The Inner Game of Tennis, the book?
No.
Oh yeah. Check it out. Definitely. You go order it on Amazon right now. The Inner Game of Tennis. It's a classic tennis philosophy meets life philosophy book about not being in your head and what you need to do. I haven't looked at it in a long time, but I know when I was really into tennis in high school and college, that was like my Bible.
Oh yeah. People are giving me all, believe me, I'm getting all.
like random, shut the fuck up, Josh. Don't tell me the name of another book.
No, it's just one out of every like 150 people is like, oh my God, do you also like tennis? I'm like, yeah. They're like, oh God. It's like a secret fetish for like every, you know, 80th person. They're like, oh, I don't get to talk to anybody about this. Like, do you just want to talk about this for a little while? I'm like, yeah, let's go.
Yeah.
But
yeah.
Two people have given me a copy of this book. That's a collection of David Foster Wallace's essays on tennis. Cause he loved it. I didn't know he did.
Okay, cool.
And it's like, oh, they're great. It's like five collected essays he wrote, and he's a crazy author, but his love for it is like, it's about math. And he spent a lot of time. He grew up in Southern Indiana, I think, or Northern Indiana, somewhere in route to Chicago.
Right.
And, talks a lot about the skill of being able to play in that area of America that's hot and windy, and how there's just like bizarre.
That too.
And how he had this like preternatural ability when he was younger and played a lot to like be able to use wind to his advantage. And he also understood math and how he ties together this like supernatural mathematics angle on it. And you're like, oh shit. Wow. Yeah, like, right. Yeah.
He goes deep on everything. You know?
That's what I was going to say, David Foster Wallace. That's what I was going to say.
Have you been to the International Tennis Hall of Fame?
No.
Oh, next time you play Newport Folk Festival, it's in Newport, Rhode Island. It's right there where the supermarket, across the street from the supermarket.
I will go. Amazing grass courts
that I think you can play or sign up for. And the museum there is incredible. Like
original
Bjorn Borg tennis rackets, John McEnroe sneakers, Rod Laver. It's amazing. I love Hall of Fames in general.
Yeah.
Of things that I love, you know, the Rock Hall, Baseball Hall.
You know. Yeah. Rock Hall's great. Yeah. Newport. What the fuck? Okay.
Newport, Rhode Island. Yeah. And they do like well, it's been there for a long time. That's where they do the induction ceremonies there and everything. Let's talk about touring real quick, and then I'll let you get back to Andy Murray, hopefully you're like DVRing, dude, because it is 2023. No one watches sports live, and I watch it live all the time.
He's playing. He's in like, what is he, in Switzerland right now? It's like a Switzerland 500 something.
Oh, these are like what, the ATC Championship tune-ups?
No, it's all
not ATC. Is it ATC?
ATP.
ATP. Okay. Yeah.
Yeah. It's all just, it's, they play like every day. That's another thing that I'm like, they're on tour all the time too. They're just like me. I'm just like a tennis player, like whatever.
Yeah.
But it's a random 500. So it's like, if you win, you get 500 points on your thing. He's just trying to like get his shit up so that.
Is he looking to get good seeds next year at the Grand Slams? Is that the thing? Or even getting into the Grand Slams?
That's the thing. He's trying to push a little bit at the end of the year so he doesn't have to work so hard before the Australian Open next year. That's my guess.
Right. Touring. You've been on, you've been doing road for so long. All right, we'll talk about tennis the whole time, but it does sort of, but it does dovetail a little bit. Yeah. You said it yourself, they're around the world all the time playing and performance. How has that relationship with being on the road changed for you over the years?
I mean, that's another thing that I just kind of tried genuinely to not take for granted, because I've toured now and everything, from like a Toyota Corolla to now we're on two buses. We have a crew bus and a band bus.
Wow.
And
how's that feel?
It feels great. It's like, even when these like giant, luxuries come your way, like being able to have your house be the thing you travel in, a bus is fabulous. It's still very easy to worry about the day to day, the brass tacks of everything. It's like every night, whether our bus driver is going to like kill us going down a hill or, whatever, like just constantly trying to keep it clean or not wake people up or wake people up or get sleep or not get sleep or, the process is wild, but I really love having a nomadic life. And I have for a while before I was able to actually do it for my job. And to have my job be, my passion too, like all of those things make it easy to have a lot of blind spots about how grateful I am for it.
That's really cool. Like you've always liked to live the nomadic life. Well, you're in the perfect career.
Yeah.
And wait, is that living the nomadic life? Is that a reflection on your life as a touring artist or kind of as your life overall in general, having been in LA back and forth, Austin, or have you always kind of had that level of wanderlust and love of travel that those that enjoy, that are artists that enjoy touring often have?
I have. Yeah. And it's like, there's like small lives that I don't feel like I've really gotten to live to that are on my kind of like itchy bucket list thing. Like I'm very, very happy in the Pacific Northwest. And don't really spend a lot of time there. But like anytime I'm in Seattle, I'm like having the time of my life.
I was just there for Bumper Shoot. I did a bunch of interviews there. What a cool festival.
Yeah.
You should do it, man. It's great. But what is it about it that turns you on so much?
I think it really has to do a lot with the landscape. Like I run really hot and I've lived in Austin my whole life.
Oh, that's right. Summer. You spits like a motherfucker on stage.
Oh yeah. No matter what, like in freezing.
So do I, dude. So do I. Hello.
No escape. So do I. So I'm a little like, I've been tortured very heavily by where I live. And I love it here during the summer too. It's got that weird, a switch will switch on me where I'm like, bring it on, bitch. I'll get into it. But man, when I'm over there, it's like I'm not fed up with it. It's like how, since I don't see snow a lot, I'm just like, oh boy, I'm snowed in. And people are like, oh God, you fucking suck, dude. You have no idea.
You're such a fucking Texan. You're such a Texan, dude.
Yeah.
So wait, so like, I can
go. It's just that, like that kind of like misty greenery Pacific Coast stuff, really, really like that high desert things, you know, like I feel very wistful, you know, like I sometimes I don't feel like writing at all or like being creative or introspective or anything like that. And mm-hmm. for some reason, when I'm in that part of the country, I always feel very reflective. You know, there's something about it that feels very artistically engaging for me.
Oh, cool. So have you ever there and like just encamped yourself and written or done something?
That's what I want to do. Yeah. But no, I haven't yet. Because random duty calls, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. Is your wife from Austin? Where's she from?
Yeah, she's from Austin too.
Oh, okay. All right.
Yeah.
That'll keep you there. Well, both of you guys are from there.
Yeah, we just happen to know, like, just all of our family and friends are here. No big
right,
deal.
Right, right. So this tour, it's mm-hmm. coming up. You're doing a bunch of dates all over the country. You're starting out in Texas and then doing, like, Nashville, East Coast, coming to the Midwest, mm-hmm. like I said, next week, playing this really cool new venue that you probably haven't played before because it just started, Salt Shed.
Oh, yeah, Salt Shed.
Yeah. Raylan Baxter on some, mm-hmm. and then Saturn.
Saturn, yeah.
Yeah. Cool. You know, it'll be great. Big set piece. Exciting. I see envision a lot of TVs for some reason. Closed circuit things.
Yeah,
no.
I have learned my lesson. Yeah, we're going to need a third bus to drag all those TVs around. That's the thing. I've learned a lot through trial and error, but that's the other thing is like, God, if you make it big, you can drag all the TVs you want. So you got to keep, I got to keep fighting so I can get my bust full of televisions to put on the stage. You know what I mean?
No, you just need a big trailer with all the shit you need, man.
Oh, I got
it. I love your creativity and the fun that you have around it. And you got a good sense of your own self. And you're the kind of person like laughs at your own shit, I would think. Is that?
Yeah, like, you have to, right?
Do you?
I've got enough of it. Yeah, I think so.
That's true. That's true. There's so much shit that's going on. But then being able to laugh at yourself means that you're kind of looking at a bigger picture and understanding who you are in the context of whatever life means to you, I guess, because, you know, if you're not kind of seeing that, have that perspective helps to find the humor in things and take things a little more lightheartedly.
Yeah. Well, I'm very happy to like my joy is not totally built by the parameters of like just music or being successful in this or, you know what I mean? Like,
yeah,
you've got a well-roundedness.
That maybe the people that are close to you aren't. He's like, that fucker's just sitting in a room all day doing fuck knows what.
No, that makes me happy too. But yeah, I do just really like being alive, you know, I like just shooting the shit or driving down the road or,
yeah,
you know, I
me too,
as much as in plenty of times I've really needed to find a stage or a spotlight or anything like that. I feel like I've gotten to do that as well. So I feel as hungry as I'll always be for that. I also feel like I could really just stand to go sit in a cabin for a little while or, you know, learn to fish or some shit, you know,
yeah.
Let's play tennis for another year. That's all.
Yeah. I don't want to make you feel wistful right now. Cause you're about to go on the road for like 6 weeks. So, you know,
yeah, but I get to like, that's,
you can do some, you can go fishing this afternoon and then like,
I get to go on the road. Like I get to play the Ryman. There's all sorts of stuff that I don't even think about that. You're like, oh, it's going to be so cool.
Right. I guess you get amped just
to leave my house. You know, I love my house. I like being at home. It's great.
Yeah. Well, you get to do both. And you know, you're playing the fucking Ryman, man.
That's so cool.
It is. I'm sure you got a good outfit planned for the Ryman special one for that show.
No, just always wear the work attire. Same thing.
Right on. Right on.
Yeah.
Wait. All right. So here's a stupid question. So if you're sweating a lot, like how many outfits do you, how do you figure that out on a daily basis? So you're not wearing the same sweat stoke stinking clothes every day, or do you do that? Or do you just not care?
No, that's what I do. I wear, we have specific, I built these jumpsuits, these Dickie jumpsuits for this run. So we all wear like, It's basically like a flight suit.
Oh, that's
but
cool.
They're super sweat resistant, and we have a alternating pair so we can keep one laundered, but they've been, you know, they've been really resilient, which is very helpful. Cause we've played in like full suits before, and those it's like,
oh man, how many
scary so fast.
Oh, I know
the whole process,
dude. I feel you, man. I'm a Schwitzer. That's why I'm asking.
Yeah.
I always want to know what people's like comfort level strategies are for that kind of stuff. And it's important when you're on stage and performing, you know, and doing it night after night too.
It's really nice to have stage clothes though. Like this is kind of the first couple of years. That's another thing we added to it that I'm like, really don't have to spend all this weird energy being like, what am I going to wear on stage tonight? And then if you do sweat all the time, like I do, you just destroy your clothes.
Right.
You're like, everything I own is wet. That's great. But now, but now all of a sudden I'm playing sports like on the road too. So it's like, now all my shit's, now I have all this wet sporting equipment too. Right. I'm like, oh God. So there's no escape. You know?
Oh yeah. Tennis is like that too, man. You just dump all that shit in your bag and you're like, what? Why does this stuff smell? Yeah, maybe because you've had it the bite. Exactly.
Don't open that bag. Oh my God.
Well, if someone's opening your old tennis bag, you got bigger problems. You know, like what are they doing? That
watch
you
out.
Get what,
yeah.
you get what you asked for. Exactly. Alejandro, so great to meet you, man, and chat with you. And thanks for sharing so much. I know I kept you longer than I said I would, but I made up for it by talking a bunch about the new album because I'm so fascinated.
Oh, I appreciate it.
I'm so fascinated by it, man. And
yeah, it means a lot. Again, it's like, I don't know. I was hoping that it would have an effect on people, and it makes me really happy that you like it.
Well, at least on me. Who am I? But I mean, there's probably, hopefully there's thousands and thousands of people out there that are like thinking the same thing.
As long as somebody went down the rabbit hole, I'm good.
Yeah. I'm in the rabbit hole.
Yeah.
All right. Thanks again for being on Roadcase, man. I'll see you on November 17th at the Salt Shed, dude.
Okay, buddy. See you soon.
Cheers. Thanks.
Cheers.
Okay, that was me talking to Alejandro Rose Garcia, also known as Shaky Graves. What a great conversation. Just a super chill dude. You know, I didn't know what to expect really going into the interview. I knew he was a nice guy and everything, and we just had a really great conversation. I just so enjoyed talking to Alejandro, and guys interested in tennis, he's a sports fan. You know, I'm on board with that. This latest album, Movie of the Week, is just extraordinary. You know, I usually don't spend so much time talking really in detail about the latest album and everything around it, but this was just so striking and amazing, and all the visual components along with it. If you haven't gone to the Shaky Graves website and checked out this Movie of the Week song shuffler, it's really amazing. Really speaks to kind of the randomness of the universe. And he called it a coincidence generator. Like I said during the interview, you can put in any concept, a genre, a name, what have you, and it will spit out 10 songs in a random track order, or supposedly random. It should have something to do with your name. He wouldn't give me the secret sauce behind that. Who knows what it is? But the concept is just absolutely super interesting. I really totally love it. And for this kind of level of concept album, and how we talked about Ziggy Stardust and David Bowie and what that concept is, and if there really is a concept, it really brings into question what is the concept of an album, and how are so many various elements related to one another. And I was like kind of kicking myself when Alejandro brought up Venn diagram in terms of a description of his life. You know, you've got that artistic component, the acting component, the visual component, then the music component. Oh, I wish I had known that was a real Venn diagram, because they all kind of intersect in this world of his new Movie of the Week album. And he loves touring. He loves being out there. He's got this kind of wanderlust and this desire to play to his fans and to go see new places in the country and tour. And that's all just really great stuff that really came to the fore during this interview. And I just really love that. Like I said, He's got, he's out there, played at the Ryman on November 1st. And he has a number of different dates in November. You can go to his website to check those out. He'll be in Chicago on November 17th. He'll also be in Madison and Indianapolis for my Midwestern friends and Roadcase family. Please go see Shaky Graves out on the road. And I really hope you enjoyed this interview. Thanks again for being here for this premiere episode of Roadcase Season 4 with Shaky Graves. So glad that you're all along for this ride. Thanks so much for being here. And I want to send a special thank you to Alejandro Rose Garcia, Shaky Graves, for being here on this episode of Roadcase. Thanks again so much for listening, and I'd like to encourage everyone to get involved with Roadcase. You can do so in a number of different ways. You can email me at info@roadcasepod.com with questions, comments, and even suggestions for guests. Or you can follow us on the socials, Instagram, Twitter, and Facebook. We're at Roadcase Pod, and we have a YouTube channel called Roadcase Podcast. And of course, you can subscribe to this podcast on your favorite listening platform. And if you could please rate and review the podcast while you're there, that would be great. So I want to thank Waltzer for this awesome theme music that we have. And I want to thank all of you for tuning in and listening to Roadcase. We have a lot of great episodes coming up, so I'll see you on down the road.